It's time to get chiseled with Rob Hamadani.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chiseled. And why do we call it Chiseled? Because we're all a work in progress. Hello again, I'm Rob Commodore. I'm your host. I'm also the author of Better You Think, and I have a guest today, Carol Souza from Omaha, Nebraska, originally from the Bay Area in California. And Carol has been in the real estate business for 20 years now. In fact, she just celebrated her 20th year with the same coaching company that we're part of, and she got a big 20-year plaque this week or last week, within the last couple of weeks, right? So, Carol, thank you for having us here today, and it's just a pleasure. You've been an inspiration to me over the years. We met, I don't know, like 18 years ago, something to that effect, maybe 20 years ago, and you've been an inspiration to me, and I know you're a huge, you have a huge heart to lead and coach others and inspire others, and I think that's just who you are. So, Carol, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
You're awesome. And I know there's going to be a lot of people tuning in because a lot of people in our, as everybody knows, in this Buffini organization that most of us are coached by, a lot of people know Carol Souza and a lot of people look up to her. So, Carol, what are you currently doing right now? And she works right now at Better Homes and Gardens in Omaha, correct, Carol?
Yeah, Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, the Good Life Group.
The Good Life Group. And why do we call it the Good Life Group?
Well, it was influenced by the Buffini and Company system from the very beginning. That just made sense. And I ended up in Nebraska, did not know until I got here that it was also the Good Life state. Good Life has just been inspiring to me from the very beginning. It was something to hook onto right away that I could relate to. Like, that would be what I wanted out of my journey through this time on this earth was a good life. Like, couldn't be any, not really great, not anything else. So that's where the influence came from.
Well, I'm going to dig in right away here. What is the good life to you then?
You know, it's so many things and it's so few things at the same time. I think it's a feeling more than it's a thing. But I think it comes with really trying to have some core values, some beliefs, some grounding in faith that starts very, very, very young, and seeing if you can connect with all the people who can confirm that for you through life. I think it's doing simple things. It's eating good food. It's drinking good wine, or sleeping a good night's sleep, and waking up and not worrying, and observing things that need help, things and people that need help, and finding a way to get those, you know, to get people connected to what they need. I think it's connecting. The good life is really connecting.
When was there a point in time when you said, hey, I want to be a connector?
Wow, that's a really good question. I can't ever think of when I didn't think that you needed, that was something that if you could be good at that, if you could be good at connecting and being connected with people who could get you what you needed, get other people what they needed, wanted, and that everybody would be happy. I just wanted peace in life as a little kid. I can remember lots of like turmoil and things going on around me and thinking, wow, if everybody would just like get along, you know, if they would just be like connected to each other in some way. I think that kind of carried on through my every career that I've ever had has been about that.
So it's funny you said the word peace, right? And like, I remember one time, that's the second time I heard it today, by the way, somebody saying, I just wanted peace. And I remember like years ago, my wife said, hey, what do you want for Christmas? I said, if you could wrap up peace in a package, just give me a piece. That's all I want.
That is beautiful. Yeah.
So what does peace look like to you? I mean, peace of mind, peace of work, peace of not worrying. What's it look like to you?
It's an absence. It's an absence of worry, absence of worry about anything. Somebody asked me once, like, what did like financial stability look like? And I think the answer they were looking for was, well, you know, $500,000 in the bank and, you know, four houses and, you know, being a landlord and having like all this, these streams of income and the right car. And I just said the absence of concern about money.
Yeah.
Would be financial stability to me. The absence of concern about money.
And that's interesting, Carol, because like you earlier, you know, 2 minutes ago, you talked about good life being so many, having so many or having so few. We use the word so many, so few. And, you know, we want to have this much money in the bank. We want to have all these rental properties. And then it's like, the more you have to worry about sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
It's a lot of chaos. There's always, there's maybe that moment, you know, that, years and years ago, like when I was a kid, there was a show on, there was the Ed Sullivan Show. Like, this really ages me like a lot, but I'm aged. So let's do it.
I'm familiar with it too. So don't you worry about it.
And there was this guy on there. He had all these different people, but there was this guy on there that had sticks and plates, and he'd have them on all the time. And the guy would get up there and he'd, you know, have all these plates on top of the sticks, and he'd keep them all going. And to me, like, why would somebody get up in the morning and say, okay, honey, well, I'm leaving for work now and I'm going, and this is what I'm going to do all day. And it's not to go do that. It's for that one moment, that 1 second when he could take his hands off the plates and see it and feel it, like that one moment when that's happening. And that's, to me, that's peace. That's in that moment of just not having to worry about any of that. It's just all going. And we don't get a lot of those,
uh-huh.
But we enter into so many things that keep us busy. I got to get up today and I got to go and I got to oversee this and I've got to check my mail and I've got my email and it's all coming at me. And I think there's the answer to your question about peace is that moment when none of those things have to be done.
Yeah. But so can we have chaos and peace at the same time? Can it coexist?
Yeah, I think we're addicted to it.
So some of us, and I might be one of them, we're at peace when we're chaotic.
Yeah, exactly. We're addicted to the sensation of it. It's not the chaos. It's the sensation of it.
I just thought of this, Carol. Is that called peace? Or is that called being sick?
I think it's both. Yeah. I think we create it all for the same reason. Yeah,
man, I've been referred to as that guy that's got to have all these plates spinning at one time. And then as you're accomplishing things, you feel good. And you put another plate on the thing and have that spinning and all that.
Yeah. And it's okay. It's okay. It's actually kind of fun. I've been doing that my whole life.
Yeah, we have. So you're in a great spot now. You're leading a lot of people. You're working for a great company, but it wasn't always that great, right? Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I've done a lot of things. So yeah, it hasn't always been that great, but I'm not sure what great looks like. So yeah.
It's all relative.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. You use the word great. So some people, like, we all have this issue sometimes, and we're going to go back to my original piece there about the earlier years, but we all have this thing where we compare and compete with others. And when we compare and compete with others, one, it's the thief of all joy, and two, it steals our peace. So when that happens, though, and like I might ask, hey, Carol, how you doing? And you say, I'm doing great. And great for you might mean one thing, and I might feel like crap on the other end, and you're great might be awesome for me, and my great might suck for you, right? And so we all put this thing, this definition or interpretation behind great as being something that it might not be for you, but is for somebody else. But we do that to ourselves, and we do that to others. And would you say that's, I guess, a fair statement?
Yeah, and I really appreciate it when people actually stop and think about what they answer when I say, "How are you? How are you doing?" Instead of, "Hey, fine." Like, fine. Just automatic behavior is probably one of my biggest things that I don't like to waste time on, is that small talk automatic behavior where I have an interaction with somebody where I don't even know what went on, you know, or there wasn't anything that wasn't on the surface, you know, instead of, and I've done that to myself. Over the years, I've made myself stop and actually think about what I'm answering. I'm instead of, you know, fine, just the Yeah, fine. How are you? You know, that fine. How are you? I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Or I'm feeling great. Or it's kind of a hard day. Or, you know, something that where there's some thought in it that interacts and causes more conversation. So it's not always just the answer of great, you know. So
yeah, it's funny because sometimes it's like, yeah, somebody asked me that and I'm like, I'd be lying to you if I told you I was doing great. Yeah. So I'm not gonna tell you I'm doing great. I got a few challenges on the way, but we're gonna be okay.
Well, I think we have to say that to each other, because otherwise you think that everybody else is having a good old time and you're just like, stuff is just hitting you and it's hitting you hard. And you're like, well, I'm the only one in the whole world because nobody else is feeling like this. And you look on, you know, you look on social media and everybody's having a great time, like nothing in between.
It's the biggest mask ever, right? When everybody puts on social media, making everything look great, but deep inside, we don't really know how everybody's feeling. Yeah. So Carol, let's go back to these early years, because I'm going to go into this, because I asked you a question. You told me, you made a statement to me when we had a brief conversation about a month ago or whatever it was. And because I'm an author of book, and Carol says, you know, she might write a book one day. And she said, if I wrote a book, I would title it Two Lifetimes in One. And so, and I'm like, okay, interesting. And, you know, some people might say I have seven lifetimes in one, two, three, five, whatever it is. So Carol, can we go back a little bit into your earlier years? And there was a lifetime that I guess was a struggle, and there was a lifetime of freedom that you're living right now, right? Is that correct? I think it's a fair statement based on our conversation. And then, let's talk about a little bit where you are and how God fits in all this, if we can. Is that okay?
God, he's coming in here already. Okay.
Well, he's already here. We can't say, God, you're leaving. He's already here. It's just a matter if we have a conversation with him or about him or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in the 50s and 60s, like graduated from high school in the 60s. I'm 76 years old. By the way,
she looks like she's 60, but anyway, 50 maybe.
Let's go in the 50s. If you're gonna change it, let's go into the 50s. Thank you. So life was completely different, and there was a kind of this unspoken set of rules of what you did. You know, you go to school. Boys are encouraged to go to college. We're encouraged to go to college. Girls were not. I went through Catholic school for years. Got married when I was 19 to the boy that lived across the street from me, who had gone off to the Air Force, came home in an Air Force uniform, and thought that was really cool. So got married, had two kids, and by the time I was 26, I was divorced. With an 18-month-old and a 5-year-old, excuse me. And, but I had a picture of what life was supposed to look like. Like, you're supposed to get married. You're supposed to buy maple furniture. My parents had maple furniture. It all looked the same. And, you do that. And I mean, you have babies and you live happily ever after. I never saw the other side of that. I was, still a young kid. So that wasn't the world. And I really didn't have a lot of, my own sense of who I was. But I knew I wasn't like what everybody said you're supposed to be. I wasn't the, you know, the perfect mom and the, you know, the married person anymore. And so, you know, it was day to day making decisions on what life should look like. And, but I knew I could be good. And I remember the words that when my ex-husband left, one of the things that he said to me is, you'll never amount to anything. And that was my marching orders. Wow. Like, and it had been my marching orders for my entire life. And I opened my first business with a business partner when I was 27 years old. An interior plant rental company in the Bay Area in Walnut Creek. And this was something we didn't know we couldn't do. And I was thinking about that today. We did Peak Producers, and we were reviewing how to I can't remember what the name of the class was, but it was by this back to basic stuff. And I remember was remembering when I operated from a place of, I don't know, I can't do this. So why wouldn't I not? And started making, you know, just deciding to do things and opened a business. And that was a, turned out to be a very big business, formed a corporation, had operations all over California and ended up selling it and going on and doing other really, really good things. But I was the president of a corporation by the time I was 30 years old and had
a female, by the way, right?
A female in the 70s.
Incredible. And, congratulations, right?
But nobody had told me that I couldn't, you know, it was not, that was pretty much my childhood was a lot of people told me what I couldn't do and I never really believed them. Mm-hmm. And so I had this belief system from the very beginning of I can do anything that I can think of and figure out to do. And that was the start of it. So.
And where did that come from? Do you think something you just inherited or something you saw or caught? What do you think?
I think I was just one of those kids that was born with just my own little, you know, my hand in a fist, and inside of there was my own little set of rules on how I was going to run my life. I figured from very, very young, and I think you and I had this conversation when we were talking about God. I figured from very, very young, like, I know more about what I'm supposed to do and be than anybody else does. I'm not sure how to do that yet. And here that comes into learning how to be, get connected.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how to do that, but I never really believed that my life was going to run by somebody else's rules. And I learned that really young, and I was in a very close-knit Italian family, Italian Portuguese family, but the Italian family was kind of, that was the neighborhood I was raised in. So everybody in the neighborhood, like was related, and they were all my bosses. Like everybody oversaw every kid, you know, like it was this one big nest. And
they weren't mob bosses, were they? Or just bosses?
I think a few of them were. They didn't talk about, those are the days that we don't talk about that kind of stuff. You know, they didn't talk about religion. They didn't talk about, yeah, no family secrets. So we had to figure that out ourselves. And yeah, so I basically kind of felt like I was on my own, even though I had people, you know, people around me, but I'm just, as I'm talking about this, I'm thinking about my own daughter who has the same kind of mind. There it comes. Yeah. Like I know how to do this myself. So, yeah.
I think she got that from you, maybe.
I think so. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. You ever saw like a picture? It's like a little clone. So yeah.
So now you got those marching orders from your husband, so to speak, right? And now you're like, nobody's going to tell me how to live my life. So now have you figured out the way that the life you want to live is supposed to be?
Didn't figure that out for like another 10 years. And I don't even know how I figured that out. I was married again and divorced. And then I met my wife, which took me in a whole different direction.
Okay.
28 years ago. So it's a lot of life.
Yeah.
A lot of years. And we've been together for 28 years. And Laura is her name, is from the Midwest. And that's how we ended up back here.
Okay.
She's from Iowa, but we were in the California area. And then during that other period of time, I started working in the mortgage credit industry. So the old mortgage credit reporting, and ended up moving all the way up to senior vice president of what ended up being Fidelity Corporation.
Okay.
And then kind of retired out of there. And that's how I ended up in real estate. So, but yeah.
But there was a time along this journey, your mom got sick, right?
Yes.
And you asked her, I think you asked her a point in her question. You wanted to talk to her about regrets.
Yeah. Yeah. That was in, my mom had, was diagnosed. My father died in 1990, of cancer, and, he had just retired and like 50 years of the same job, retired, really, really happy that like now he's free to do all this stuff. And he was diagnosed with cancer and died in 1990. And then in 92, my mom got sick and was diagnosed in 93 with 93 or 94 with Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. So I spent a lot of time taking care of her, and it was kind of a real life changing time for me. I mean, it was definitely a life changing time for her.
Yeah,
but it was really a life changing time for me because I had been so busy running around being important to other people for my whole life that hadn't really spent a whole lot of time with her. And I asked her during this period of time, we got a chance to talk a lot. And I asked her about what she regretted. And she gave me like a list of things that she regretted in her life. And one of them was that she, one of the most important ones was that she paid too much attention to what other people thought and lived her life based on didn't want to hurt somebody's feelings or what would my grandmother say? What would her sister say? What would somebody say? And then the other one was, which was really interesting, is that she never was able to have a career like me. She had watched me and she said, you know, beyond anything she thought I would ever achieve, that I had done all these things. And she said she just would have liked to have had that part of her life be something that was about her, that she never really had any part of her life that was really about her. It was about being a mother, being a wife, being a daughter, being a sister, being all these things. And she just didn't have that piece. And that was to me like earth shattering.
Yeah,
like,
I can hear that.
Listening to her tell me that. And it made a huge change in me and in what I was doing with my life. And I can tell you the other piece because I know you're going to ask me about it.
well, before you jump to the other piece, so when she said that, you said it was earth shattering to you. Like, how did you feel in the moment she was sharing that with you?
I felt really sad for her because I had watched it, but it was, you know, it was during that period of time that that's just how things were. You know, that's how, you know, my father didn't want her to have a career. So she didn't, you know, not like today's woman. That's like, hey, well, then I don't need you around.
Yeah, right.
You know,
or are we more women are leading? Well, if not now, we'll be leading the workforce.
There's more women in the workforce now than ever before.
And correct.
That's not a, you know, man against woman statement that I'm making. I'm making that statement for everybody because as much as it was about my mother as a female in her time, it's also about males, young males, you know, it's about all of us just making sure we have that piece that identifies like to us ourselves. Yeah. It's not to anybody else. So
then with the whole, I use the word people pleaser, like worrying about what other people think about you all the time. What did you have that in your life at one point? And if so, do you still have it now?
I still fight it. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's 1,000% in me. I'm never, even if I do make a decision or do something that I know is, you know, not what somebody else would necessarily want me to do, I feel horrible about it. Or I have to help myself not feel horrible about it. Or, you know, yeah, I think a lot of people fight it. And it's something that I know that it exists in me because I coach people, and it's one of the biggest things I coach people on. So, you know, we teach what it is we want to learn. And And that's a huge piece that I'm really good at coaching somebody else on that.
So. and you had what, struggle coaching yourself?
Yeah.
Is that what you're going to say? Yeah.
Yeah. Or my coach coaching me. Yes.
Because it's interesting because I think there's an awareness piece there. When you become aware that you're worried about what somebody else is thinking, when you go do something in that moment, you become aware. You're like, all right, how do I coach myself through it right now?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So the rest of that, my mom, this was a really funny thing. My mom was only supposed to live for like 6 weeks. Doctor's like, 6 weeks. That's it. That's going to be a really, really long period of time. And she lived for almost 6 months because she had my brothers and my attention, which she had not had for years. And, wow. And I thought about that too, like how we really can run this. Like yeah. we can really, whether it's at the end or at the beginning. And for her, I'm sure that helped her to be able to get some of her own potential out and done by interacting yeah. with both of us. So
that's so good. And then, so it was, you said the comment was earth shattering to you. So now I feel like there's a sense of, okay, Carol says to herself, like, hey, I'm not going to worry about what other people think anymore. Yeah. This might sound harsh or brash or rash, whatever. I'm going to play by my rules and nobody else's rules.
Yeah. Which are really good rules. Like they've served me well, but yeah.
It's not like in a, that's where vindictive style or anything like that. I'm living the life I want to live. I'm living the life that I believe God wants me to live. I think that's where you're going with that, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's in that world back then, there were a whole lot of rules about making sure that you don't say things or do things that would embarrass the family, whatever those rules were about, or would go against what we've always done. That's the way we've always done it. That's one of my real pet peeves. I can't stand when people say that. Why do you do that? It's because the way we've always done it.
That's not good enough.
That is not, even if it's an okay thing, I'm still going to like look at it and go, okay, so is it still working? Like,
yeah. Or how's that working for you now?
Yeah, it did. It opened up for me. One of the biggest fear that I had, which was at the time and when my mom died, I was in a relationship with my current wife, but I was not out. I was not out as a lesbian, as a gay woman. And the day my mom died, I called my daughter and asked her if she would have dinner with me. And I sat down with her and I took the biggest shot I've ever taken at really risking something. And I came out to my daughter and my daughter just looked at me and she said, well, first of all, Mom, we know, of course. so does Scott, my brother, and so did Grammy, my mom. And I'm like, okay. So you didn't make this easier on me. And she said, Mom, well, why would you have so much trouble like coming out to us, like telling us that? And I said, well, I was afraid you wouldn't love me. Like, I mean, that's what kids go through who are coming out. Like, it's a huge thing. And my daughter said, why would you think that we would feel anything different to you than you taught us? You taught us, no matter what you do, I may not like it, but I'm going to always love you. So why would you think that was any different with you? And that moment, then I called my son, my older son, didn't have Max yet, and talked with him. And from that moment on, it was like, where I live, you can't touch me. Like, I've already taken the biggest risk I could take in my life. Like, there was none left. My mom and dad were both dead. My brother... I have a brother, but that was like, that's it. Like, I'm free. That's free.
to me. That's the second life of the two life story, it. Right?
That's the second life. Yes.
Yeah. And so there's two lives. So how many people could, I mean, and it doesn't matter whether it's gay or not gay or some type of business or not doing business or employee or entrepreneur. It doesn't matter. It's like, what two lives are we all living?
Yeah.
Right? Because I think in some capacity we do. Right.
Yeah.
And like I feel like sometimes, you know, I live this life that, hey, I'm supposed to be this, you know, good leader. I've been Rob, your leader, this, your leader, that. And I feel like I don't even know how to lead sometimes. Right. And so, you know, but it's like, I have this passion and this thought that I want to do certain things, and I'm worried about what other people think. Well, who's he think he is going to do that? It's that whole imposter syndrome thing. Like, I'm not good enough, smart enough, or no one's going to want to read or listen to me. And it's like, just go do your thing.
Yeah.
Just go do your thing. Cause like, God, I mean, I do believe God's playing a part in all this. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what's your thing? What's his thing? What's her thing? Find out what that thing is and go do it. Find out what that thing that leads you to freedom, right? The freedom to be who you're supposed to be, that authentic piece of that person you're supposed to be. And I think that's so important that you're able to be you.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I've heard people say that, you know, that statement that's been said over and over, well, if I knew better, I'd do better. And if I knew, I really didn't. The whole idea of coming out, and it can be anything that somebody is not really, that somebody feels ashamed of or not connected to or not truthful about. It can be anything. I think having that piece done for me in my life was actually what you said. It was that line of, okay, now I've got this life. What do I want this one to look like? And by that time, I was in my late 40s. So starting over a new life, both of my kids, my older kids were in college, which was an interesting, an interesting scenario. And so then Laura and I began to live our life, and then went from there. And then that's like a whole other life, but it got integrated into my life with my older kids. My older kids came right into this new life. And then we had Max. Max is 23. So there's those years. So I got to another thing that got to happen for me. That's been one of the privileges of my life, is to be able to parent again as an adult instead of as a kid.
Oh,
two completely different experiences. And I didn't never think that was going to happen, but it's been amazing. And now having Max be older and my other kids being older, and now they're friends, and they've always been very close, but parenting from being 20 years old and parenting from being early 50s on is a whole lot different.
A different ball game, right?
Yeah, it's a totally, like, imagine having babies now, Rob.
Yeah, right. That ain't happening for me anyway. So you've taken this freedom now, and now you're in real estate and you're in a good company, and you had a team initially, and I know I think you sold your portion to a previous guest of ours, Tim Reeder. Yeah. But you're coaching people now. You're coaching. You're certified coach and leader, and you're helping people, and you're helping them grow in business and in life. So how fulfilling has that been for you?
That's it. That's the it for me. It's been amazing to do that, because I love watching people discover how freaking awesome they are. Like, I think pretty much everybody is awesome. And even the people that are not awesome, they were awesome and somebody messed them up. Uh-huh. I really do. I think people have so much, just so many amazing things about who they are, and not even like the potential of somebody, but but the actual, like, who they are is, like, good enough. Remember, were you in, I don't know if you were in Bermuda.
Bermuda, yeah.
Yeah, Bermuda, the, you know, who you are is good enough to be great. Like, yeah. That was the, something so simple is really what I really believe. And that's the impetus for me for coaching is helping people by asking them questions and letting them answer pretty much themselves, kind of helping guide them around, but figure out like how really cool they are and yeah. what greatness they have about them. If they would just start believing what they feel versus, you know, I'm going to go back to my same questioning as a kid of, that may work for you, but that's not me, you know, like really going back to your source, your true north. And for me, coaching is there, and they help people like get to where they want, you know, they think they want to go or where their goals are, or are those somebody else's goals? So,
yeah. So in the process of coaching and helping people discover who they are and what they're driven to, do you feel yourself that you're still continuing to grow in that capacity as a coach as well?
Absolutely. Like that's my biggest fear, of getting old is like not growing, like not having something in front of me that pulls me to growth.
Yeah.
And, so I'm, most of what I do, I'm constantly following things that help me grow too.
Yeah.
And I love to hear the frustration that somebody has, because generally it's something that, you know, I can relate to, because if I'm being truthful. And I ask people questions that other people don't ask them. So.
Well, you told me you want to become a professional question asker, right?
Yeah, that's really what a coach is. If you really think about like what a coach is and the times that when you are, I know that times that I really want to avoid my coach, I'm like, I just keep on talking because I don't want him to ask me a question.
That's the secret, right?
That's the secret.
I got to tell you, and being, you know, transparent here, part of this, and this is, I guess, an unintended good thing or a good consequence that in doing this podcast, I feel like I've gotten better at learning to ask questions and shutting up, ask the question and shut up.
Yeah.
And so I love that you want to be a better professional question asker. That's so, it was so awesome. So just for all the listeners out there. Yeah. When come from a place of curiosity, learn how to ask questions and ask questions of yourself and of others. Because we sometimes have the answers to our own questions. We just haven't asked ourselves the question.
Yeah. And I think now, especially since COVID, you know, everything has like this place in time. Well, COVID now is that since COVID, you know, it was like before it was like since 9/11, 9/11. So there's always these place markers. So since COVID, I think people are so lonely, and they're not just lonely for this physical, let's be in the same room, kind of connection. I think people are lonely for intimacy, and the kind of intimacy is like asking people questions, like, you know, how are you? How do you feel about that? Instead of just this rhetorical world that we've kind of created, and you know, the right meme and the right answer and the cool thing to say, and it doesn't have to be that cool. Let's just be you. Answer the question with like what you're really feeling, and let me have to deal with it.
Yeah. So before we wrap up here, you know, I got to go one more question. You know, it's coming here. So what role does God play in all this for you?
Well, you and I had this God conversation already, and I'm going to probably just tell you the same thing. Same thing. God, like I knew who God was in my world, like as a little kid. I can remember being 6 years old, being a little kid, sitting in the pews in a Catholic church. And knowing that, you know, that God was sitting next to me, and it wasn't always the one that the nuns were talking to me about, or the priests were talking about, that was the, you know, the one, if you don't do this, this will happen, and mortal sins and venial sins, and it's going to be black, and then you can go to purgatory, you know, all that, like, was so, like, confusing to me. Cause this was like my friend, like, this is a person that was going to be like, hey, that's some bad stuff you're doing there, but you go ahead and do it. I'm going to catch you, but I'm not going to put you in hell for it, but I'm just telling you right now, don't do that. So that one has always been with me. I have never gone in any other direction. That has been, you know, I've always been a girl, woman of faith. And I always come back to, it's God. That's who my person is. And, but I'm not, you know, I don't think that you have to have that relationship. I don't think that I do. And it's really good for me. I'll present all that to, you know, to anybody that asks me, but, yeah, that's, if I didn't have a belief in God and in a really, good life, God, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Yeah. Yeah. You're leading and inspiring a lot of people. So before we close here, I got to ask you, how much more chiseling is going on in your life?
You know, there's a lot more that needs to go on. Yeah. I think my biggest challenge in my life right now is things that have to do with health. And, those are the things that I'm trying to chisel away at, little by little. And then also just making sure that, in the world that I live in, that I'm very discerning about who I spend time with, like this time I'm spending with you right now.
And I'm grateful for that, by the way.
I'm grateful for you. And I really want to spend time with people that I care about, that I know care about me, and they tell me. Like I had a card that I just was reading through, like for the third time, of somebody that wrote me just some really, really cool things about me, because I needed to hear it, you know?
Right.
And I needed to know that. So that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm chiseling down. I'm chiseling down into just the heart of the watermelon. That's all I want. I don't want to mess with the rest of it. Just give me the heart.
There you go. I love that. I love you. And I am so grateful that you were willing to be on the show today. And
I love you too, Rob.
And Carol, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, and I'm assuming you're willing to hear from people, how would they get a hold of you?
My phone number is 402-871-9817, or just look me up just look me up anywhere. I'm all over the place.
Easy to find, right? Easy to find and easy to talk to as well.
This
was
great, Rob. Thank you.
I appreciate you. Well, look, thank you again. And everybody, until next time, let's go get chiseled. Take care. Thank you, Carol.
Thanks, Rob.
You just got chiseled with Rob Pondari. Be sure to like this podcast, share it with your friends, and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. Also, you can find Rob's book on Amazon, Better Than Equal.